This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
In September 2025, cold case detective Dan Jackson stood at a podium in Austin, Texas, and said something that stopped the room. He was talking about Amy Ayers, a 13-year-old girl who had been killed inside the yogurt shop 34 years earlier. The youngest victim, the one who would come along that night just because her friend Sarah was there and Jennifer was driving. And Jackson said this: Amy's final moments on this earth were to solve this case for us. It's because of her fighting back. In the last seconds of her life, while she was being attacked by a man who outweighed her, who had bound the others, who had a gun, Amy Ayers clawed at him hard enough to trap biological material under her fingernails. She was 13 years old. She was terrified and overpowered and dying. And she fought. That material sat in an evidence locker for 34 years, waiting for the science to exist that could read it. When it finally did, it pointed to a man nobody ever considered. A man who had been dead for more than two decades. A serial killer whose trail of violence stretched across four states, more than a dozen victims. And it was a 13-year-old girl's last act of resistance that put his name on the board. This is part five, the final installment of the Yogurt Shop Murder series on Hidden Killers. For four episodes, we followed this case through the crime, the botched investigation, the false confessions, and the wreckage left behind. Now we get to the truth, the real killer, the forensic breakthrough, and the moment the state of Texas finally said the words these families and the wrongfully accused have been waiting for decades to hear. Robert Eugene Brashears was born in 1958 in the kind of anonymity that violent men use as camouflage. He drifted. He worked odd jobs. He accumulated a criminal record that included a 1985 conviction for attempted murder after a shooting of a woman. By all visible measures, he was a low-level offender, the kind of person the system processes and releases and forgets about. But beneath the surface, Brashears was something else entirely. He was a predator who operated across state lines, targeted women and girls, and employed a method so consistent that it functioned as a signature. He restrained his victims with their own clothing. He essayed them. He sometimes set fires to destroy evidence, and he moved on. In April of 1990, Brashears bludgeoned, essayed, and strangled a 28-year-old Genevieve Zatrickley in her apartment in Greenville, South Carolina. He dragged her body into a bathtub and wrote a message on the bathroom mirror. DNA from the crime scene was isolated in 1995 and uploaded to the national database, but it matched nothing at the time. In 1997, he assaulted a 14-year-old girl in Memphis, Tennessee. In November 1998, he entered the home of a 38-year-old Sherry Shearer and a 12-year-old daughter, Megan, in Portageville, Missouri, and killed them both, a mother and her child in their home. And in between those crimes, on the night of December 6, 1991, he walked into a yogurt shop in Austin, Texas, and murdered four teenage girls. 2 days after the yogurt shop killings, Brashears was stopped at a U.S. Border Patrol checkpoint on Interstate 10 between El Paso and Las Cruces, New Mexico. He was driving a truck that had been reported stolen in Georgia. When agents searched the vehicle, they found a .380 AMT backup pistol, the same make and model of firearm used to kill Amy Ayers. Brashears tried to flee, drove about a mile, and surrendered. He was charged with auto theft and being a felon in possession of a firearm. The gun was confiscated, and then, in one of those decisions that haunts a case forever, the weapon was eventually returned to Brashears' father after sentencing. It likely ended up back in Brashears' hand. He would use the .380 AMT backup to take a woman's life in Kentucky in 1998. And on January 19th of 1999, cornered by police in Missouri during a standoff over an unrelated matter, he turned that same gun on himself. Robert Eugene Brashears died by a self-inflicted gunshot wound at the age of 40. He was never charged with any of these crimes. He was never identified as a suspect in the yogurt shop case during his lifetime. He simply ceased to exist, leaving behind a trail of destroyed lives that wouldn't be connected for another 26 years. The man who finally connected those threads was Detective Dan Jackson. Jackson took over the yogurt shop cold case in 2022 and approached it the way you approach a puzzle that everyone else has given up on. He went back to the physical evidence. In June of 2025, he made a decision that seemed small on paper, but changed everything. He resubmitted the 380 shell casing that had been found in a floor drain at the yogurt shop to the National Integrated Ballistic Information Network, NIBIN. The casing had been submitted before, years earlier, but the software had improved dramatically in the interim. Ballistic imagery technology had gotten better at matching the microscopic markings that a firearm leaves on a casing. Jackson figured it was worth another look, and in July of 25, he got a hit. The casing matched an unsolved 1998 murder in Kentucky. Same gun, different state, different decade. Jackson began working with Kentucky investigators and quickly saw the similarities. The victim had been assaulted. The crime was violent and personal. The perpetrator appeared to have acted alone. He expanded the search. In August, he requested a Y-STR DNA keyword search from every lab in the United States that maintains Y chromosome genetic profiles. Y-STR testing analyzes the male-specific portion of DNA, and it's particularly useful in cases involving mixed biological samples. Labs across the country ran the search. Most returned partial matches or nothing at all, but one lab came back with a complete 27 allele match. The South Carolina State Lab. The profile from the yogurt shop crime scene matched a known profile from the 1990 murder of Genevieve Zatricki in Greenville. That profile belonged to Robert Eugene Brashears. To confirm, Jackson arranged for retesting of the biological material recovered from Amy Ayers' fingernail clippings during her 1991 autopsy. The results came back with a 2.5 million to one likelihood that the DNA belonged to Brashears. The shell casing from the floor drain was consistent with the patterns produced by the gun Brashears used to end his own life in 1999. Two pieces of evidence, one the size of a bullet casing, the other microscopic, separated by 34 years of time and thousands of miles of geography. They pointed to the same man, and that man had been dead for over a quarter century. In late September 25, the Austin Police Department held a press conference. Chief Lisa Davis announced that the only physical evidence from the crime scene had been matched to Robert Eugene Brashears. This is one of the most devastating and haunting cases in the city's history, and it should be one of the most humiliating, too. Detective Jackson explained how the breakthrough happened, the resubmission, the NIBIN hit, the interstate DNA search, the fingernail confirmation. He told the assembled reporters and family members that the discovery of Brashears as a suspect simply wasn't possible before 2025. The technology didn't exist. The databases weren't built. The connections couldn't be made. I'm sorry that it took 34 years for us to get here, he said, but we're here now. And then his voice carrying the weight of the case. That had consumed 3 years of his life and three decades of city's grief, he said the line that defined the moment. Amy's final moments on this earth were to solve this case for us. It's because of her fighting back. Senora Thomas, Eliza's sister, was in that room. She'd spent decades believing she might die without ever knowing who had killed her sister. She built a career as a therapist, helping other people process trauma while carrying her own. She'd received kindness from strangers in Austin for 34 years, people who recognized her name, who told her they prayed for her family, who never forgot what happened on Anderson Lane. And now she was hearing the name of the man who did it. I know now what happened, she said. And that does ease my suffering, and I can continue to pass on all the kindness that have been shown to me over the decades, and I hope that I can ease the suffering of others. 5 months later, on February 19th, 2026, the formal exoneration happened. Travis County Judge Diane Zablazy declared Michael Scott, Robert Springsteen, Maurice Pearson, Forrest Wellborn factually innocent. Charges were dismissed with prejudice, meaning they can never be brought again. First Amendment attorney Trudy Strasburger stood in open court and delivered the words that the previous DA had refused to say for 17 years. Over 25 years ago, the state prosecuted four innocent men for one of the worst crimes Austin has ever seen. We could not have been more wrong. She added, simply said, both the science and the confessions can't be true. The truth is that Robert Eugene Brashears is guilty, and he alone committed the yogurt shop murders. Springsteen's attorney, Amber Farley, addressed the courtroom with a reminder that cut through the ceremony. Let us not forget that Robert Springsteen could be dead right now, executed at the hands of the state of Texas. That's not hyperbole. That's arithmetic. A man was sentenced to death for a crime he didn't commit based on a confession he was coerced into giving, supported by zero physical evidence. If the Supreme Court hadn't banned the execution of juveniles, if the timing had been slightly different, if one more procedural domino had fallen the wrong way, the state of Texas would have killed an innocent man, and the actual killer, the one who left DNA under a 13-year-old's fingernails, would have remained forever unknown. Marissa Pierce was there. Her father wasn't. Maurice Pierce had been dead for more than 15 years. She stood in that courtroom and spoke for a man who had been screaming into a void since he was 15 years old. "Daddy, you have your name back," she said. "The world finally hears what you were trying to say all along." Scott and Wellborn were present to hear the ruling. Springsteen was not. The men and their families are now exploring restitution and considering civil actions. Bring it on. It's time for a payday from Austin. Under Texas law, individuals who are imprisoned and later declared factually innocent may be eligible for up to $80,000 per year of wrongful incarceration. I think you should go a bit higher. No amount of money repairs what was taken, but at least the state is finally admitting it took something. The man who actually killed Amy Ayers, Eliza Thomas, Jennifer Harbison, and Sarah Harbison was never punished for it. Robert Eugene Brashears died on his own terms in a standoff with police over an unrelated matter in January of 1999. He was 40. He'd committed at least 8 murders across 4 states. He had assaulted women and girls from South Carolina to Tennessee to Texas to Missouri. He walked in and out of a criminal justice system multiple times, convicted of attempted murder, arrested in auto theft, found with firearms as a felon, and the system processed him each time without ever connecting him to the trail of violence he was leaving behind. There was no trial, no verdict, no sentence, no moment where the judge looked at him and told him what he was. He escaped all of it. And for 26 years after his death, his name meant nothing to anyone. That's the reality this case leaves with you. There is no clean ending. The killer is dead. The wrongfully convicted are free. Well, 3 of them are. One's dead. The families have a name, but justice, in the way most people understand that word, doesn't exist here. What exists is the truth. And the truth is that it took 34 years, a detective who refused to stop, and the final act of a 13-year-old girl fighting for her life to get here. Whether that's enough is a question I can't answer for you, but I think about Amy Ayers in the yogurt shop, 13 years old, in the worst moment a person can be in, and instead of giving up, she reached out and grabbed hold of the man who was killing her. She held on tight enough to mark him, and 34 years later, those marks spoke his name. That's not nothing. Might be the only thing that matters in this entire story. And the names of the people who convicted, wrongly convicted, railroaded these people? It's coming up. The story just doesn't end. While there might not be criminal justice for those folks, social justice does exist. And your names will be known. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. We'll continue our conversation there. Until next time, my name's Tony Brewski. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.